Welcome to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. My guest is Suzanne Havala. Say that right? Hobbs. I want to get that exactly right.
Havala.
Havala. Hobbs.
But call me Sue.
Sue. I can call you Sue.
You can call me Sue.
And that's quite a nice gift, Sue, because you are distinguished in many respects, but most importantly right now in two respects. First of all, as a distinguished faculty member at the School of Public Health, and also as a very popular columnist for us in this area in the Raleigh News and Observer, but I know it's also in the Charlotte Observer and
in
other
right.
newspapers. And mm-hmm. so widely circulated and makes other people who write columns jealous that you get to be in communication with so many people. You're also the author of a new book called Get the Trans Fat Out. And we know that trans fat is a villain, but it is so complicated. I don't know where I know that it's in or maybe was in fried foods in fast food outlets and maybe in some popular donuts that I like to eat. And the other thing that I know is that it was also a hidden villain in one of the most popular American products ever, Crisco, which is something
yes.
that we loved
right.
to do. So can we talk about – will you talk to us about your
sure.
book and about trans fat and what we ought to know and what you tell us – teach us in your book?
Sure. Well, trans fat is a moving target. Now that the Food and Drug Administration requires – that food manufacturers list it on food labels, people are realizing how much trans fat is in the foods that they eat. Consequently, over this past year, major food companies all over America have been working day and night to in research and development to find ways to get the trans fat out of their products. And so when I say trans fat is a moving target, that's because so many of the foods that just a year ago contained lots of trans fat are starting to shed it. So for example, cookies, crackers, pie crusts, there are all sorts of foods that a year ago I could have gone to my grocery store and pulled them off the shelf and read the nutrient fact label and found that they contained trans fat. And I'll tell you, DG, that was one of the first things I ever looked at when I looked at a food label was once that became available, trans fat content.
Well, can you explain, there are lots of things that are interesting to me about it, but why is trans fat so bad? And if it was so bad, why did we ever use it?
Well, I'll tell you, consumer groups lobbied the federal government for years, for decades, to expose the trans fat content of foods on food labels, and only recently were successful. But trans fat is linked very convincingly to risk of heart disease. So, not unlike saturated fat, and we can talk about that too if you'd like. But trans fat is a man-made fat. It's a vegetable oil that's been processed so that it its chemical configuration has been altered, and the effect it has in our bodies is that it raises the levels of bad cholesterol, so to speak, and increases our risk for a heart attack.
Well, we used to think. Trans fat was just the greatest thing in the world? I mean,
I'll tell you why we used it. It's because it really was almost magical in foods. Trans fat enabled cakes and cookies to be baked in a factory and set out on the shelf in grocery stores. Years ago, trans fat, it marketed as Crisco then, that's what made it possible for housewives to go out and buy a cake rather than to have to bake one at home.
So it didn't go rancid like the natural fats do.
That's right. It helped to make foods shelf stable and actually helped improve the texture of baked goods.
Sounds like a good thing to me.
Well, I mean, it really acted a lot like lard and a lot like butter in foods, but it was much cheaper.
And what is what you're telling me, what you tell folks in the book, and I guess what we're learning is that trans fats are even more unhealthy than other fats in terms of what they do with respect to your predisposition for coronary and cardiovascular diseases. Is that sort of it?
That's it. But here's this is where I hope I can try to simplify it for your
listeners. Good. Yeah, please do that. I just can't understand it.
Simplify it in one way, but it really complicates things in another way. And here I'll tell you how. Trans fat is one type of fat. It's essentially man-made. There are some natural sources of trans fat, but not many. For the most part, it's a man-made thing, and it has a bad effect on health. The federal government, in requiring now that food companies list it on food packages, is forcing food companies to find alternatives, because nobody wants to eat these foods knowing how bad they are for your health. Now that we see that how much is actually contained in a lot of foods. So a lot of cookies and cakes and these foods that contain trans fats are being reformulated and substitutes are being used. It's trans fat, bad fat. But saturated fat, which in a lot of food products is used in much the same way that that trans fat was used. Saturated fat has a similar effect on your health. So the Institute of Medicine, a scientific advisory board that advises lawmakers and policymakers, the IOM found in a major report a couple years ago that there's actually no safe level of intake of either trans fat or saturated fat. So saturated
fat.
What
does that mean? Are you saying I should try to avoid it altogether?
Yes. That's,
I can't do that.
That's where the complicated part comes in. Simplify this, everybody should cut way back on trans fat and saturated fat together.
This is what gets complicated for me. I don't ever buy trans fat, and I don't ever buy saturated. I don't, because it's not, you know, I go in and I get a hamburger, and I go buy a Krispy Kreme, and I go buy a pizza.
And I'll tell you, not even a dietitian chooses foods by the saturated fat or trans fat count. I mean, most of us choose whole foods. We don't pay all that much attention to food labels. Now, you know, we don't look at a food label every time.
Right, this is why it's so frustrating what you're doing to me. You just don't eat trans fats.
Here's how
it translates. Don't eat saturated fats. And then I say, okay, but how do you translate that into my choices about foods?
Here's how it works. Saturated fat is mostly in animal products. So it's in meat, cheese, high-fat dairy foods. Trans fat, nowadays, as of today, most of the trans fat you'll get in your diet comes from fast food. Fast food French fries and fast food fried pastries and breaded sandwiches that have been deep fried. So most of it is in fast food now. Much of it has been taken out of the things that you buy at the grocery store. So nevertheless, you can still read a food label and see whether the thing you're buying contains trans fat. And
when you're passing through the takeout section, it doesn't say if you buy a double cheeseburger with bacon that you're getting so much fat or saturated,
My advice is to go on companies' websites. But here's how to simplify it. You can make some really fundamental changes in your eating habits and not have to worry about counting trans fat, counting saturated fat grams, and just live and just eat and enjoy your food. But it does require some fundamental changes in the way most of us eat. And what it means is eating lots more fruits and vegetables. And I mean heaping helpings of fruits and vegetables. So when you're eating dinner, rather than having a big piece of meat on the middle of your plate and having the side dishes, you know, the vegetables sort of teetering on the edge of your plate, you should flip-flop those. If you eat meat with a meal, and you ought to eat a lot more meatless meals, but if you eat meat with a meal, the meat should be a very minor component of the food, you know, sort of like little pieces of chicken in a stir fry rather than an entire chicken breast. And instead, bring the vegetables, the things that most of us think of as side dishes, bring them to the center and double the portion.
So you're saying don't worry about learning all this stuff. Just eat this common sense way.
It's I don't know that it's common sense for most of us. We are raised in a culture that does not support support this way of eating.
All right, now we're going to take a break. I'm talking to Suzanne Havala Hobbs, Sue Hobbs, who is a professional dietitian, member of the faculty at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill School of Public Health, and a very popular columnist for the Raleigh News Observer, Charlotte Observer, and other newspapers. And she and I'll be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. I'm Sue Hobbs. Can I just call you Sue
you
Hobbs?
You bet. Talk about simplifying things.
Yeah, simplify things. And I'm talking about the things that we eat. So your book, Get the Trans Fat Out, 601 Simple Ways to Cut the Trans Fat Out of Any Diet, is an important book because it speaks to those of us who say, oh, trans fat, it's bad, but I can't. It's too complicated for
yes.
me. You give some very practical and pragmatic ideas in 601 simple ways. Some of them aren't quite as simple as others, but about ways to get, once you decide, once you agree trans fat's bad for me, once you accept that, and then you find that it's hard to address the challenge of getting it out of, how about illustrating, what are some of the easy things that we can do to get it out of our diet?
And DG, let me just say that, with working on this book, I approached this book the same way I do my columns. Give a little bit of a background so that people understand what the issue is. But really, what I have found throughout my career is what people really need the help with is the how-to.
Yeah, don't confuse me.
Okay.
Just tell me what to do.
Okay, I'll buy it. I'll buy it that this is good for me or this is bad. But tell me what I can make for dinner tonight. And so that's what 98% of this book is all about. And likewise, what I try to do in my column. So for starters, we could go right down, what do you eat for breakfast? What do you eat for lunch? What do you make for supper? How do you do your shopping? What kinds of foods do you stock in your house? Do you go out to eat or do you make your own meals at home? If you make your own meals at home, well, how can you do that quickly? None of us has much time anymore. So these are the kinds of issues I try to address and what I think people need the most help with.
Well, we were talking before the break about fast foods and the complexities of getting, if we don't want trans fats, how to do it. Now, of course, you can say just buy salad at Burger King or McDonald's, but And we're dealing now not with both trans fats and
saturated fats.
So we're going to agree that they may not be equally bad, but they're
yes.
both very bad.
Yes.
And so you
yes.
want to avoid them, and it's hard to avoid them at fast food. So
right.
what are your tips?
Okay, well, one thing to keep in mind is to eat foods as close to their natural state as possible. So if I eat a baked potato, I'm more likely to not get trans fat or saturated fat.
I put the butter in the cream and all of this.
I would put salsa on mine, chopped tomatoes and black olives. But, as opposed to eating the processed fried potatoes.
Well, now let's talk about fried potatoes for just a
second.
Okay,
uh-oh. I must have touched on something.
No. I mean, this is really hard for me because, there are good things and bad things in this life. And one of the best things is hot out of the fat fried potatoes when they're hot, crispy.
Yeah, make your own at home.
They're just so good.
Make your
good.
Own. one of the ways to circumvent the problems with diet is to have more control over what you eat. And the more you eat at home, the more control you have.
All right. Well, that's great advice, and that's exactly where I ask you to go. But nevertheless, I'm at the I'm right there at the counter, and it's I'm going to get a sandwich or a hamburger, and right there, what do you call it, the meal, the value meal or something like that?
Sure.
Just for a couple of dollars more, I can get a big thing of French fries and a big soft drink, and I can smell them. They just taste so good. And you almost got to convince me again that I ought not to eat those French fries.
Okay. Well, I'd convince you again. Number one, I always look for alternatives to fast food. I bet I don't eat more at a fast food restaurant more than a handful of times in a year. And if I do, I generally swing through Taco Bell and I get a bean burrito or two bean burritos. And often I get them without cheese and I can't tell the difference. And I put hot sauce on them and they're great. Or I stop into Burger King and I get a veggie Whopper and I get a side salad with that. They are delicious. We went to the beach this weekend. On the way home, we stopped at Burger King. It was one of the few times in a year that we do that. And we had somebody in the car who was starving, and we stopped, and we got veggie burgers. So
everybody, you didn't have a heretic in the car who said, I'm just got to have some french fries.
No. Well, you have some control over a 12-year-old.
Yeah, if you do, that's great.
When he's riding in the back seat. But that's, I mean, avoiding those circumstances where you have no choices. I don't go places where I don't have choices. And that's one way that right up front you can help to, you know, gain some control.
Well, can I get you off track for just a second? When you talk about the 12-year-old in the back of the car, and I found 12-year-olds to be becoming uncontrollable in terms of their developing certainty that they know they begin to feel like they know more than you do, and they're not going to let you control them. But and they also like these fat foods, these french fries and stuff like that. What is this mostly for adults? I mean, but what's the problem about letting kids eat these things?
Well, I actually think that kids should be permitted to make their own choices. At a certain age, away from home, I think kids should be allowed to exercise their choices in food. So, for example, we have a almost 17-year-old and a 12-year-old at home, and we eat a certain way. I cook most of our meals at home, and we eat really well. And they love the food. I usually offer a variety of things, and so if there's something at a meal that one of us doesn't like, there's usually something else to eat. But when they're away from home, they've got lunch money to spend, or they are out with a friend, they make their own choices. And if they order a cheeseburger or, you know, have a fast food soft drink, or that's up to them. I really feel as though you, as adults, our role is to set the example, to model the eating habits we want kids to adopt. And then they have to ultimately make their own choices.
Is it different for the younger children, for the 5 and 6 and 7 year olds?
I think for the 4 or 5, 6 year olds, I think then it's a matter of giving them appropriate choices. So, for instance, you might say it's lunchtime. You can have a peanut butter sandwich, a bean burrito, or I don't know, a bowl of lentil soup. You take your choice of those three things,
and don't put Big Mac or something or hamburger, cheeseburger on the list.
Sure. Or if you have to, I mean, let's be real. Let's say you're out, you're on vacation, and you're going to stop somewhere to eat. Stop at a restaurant where you do have some choices.
When I see the kids' plates, always it's a hot dog, a cheese sandwich, and with it, French fries.
Right.
And so, okay to just splurge from time to time and let them have a good time?
You know that I've always hated the saying, anything, everything in moderation. Yes, okay, once in a while splurge, sure. But you have to be honest with yourself about how often is often, or you know, how infrequently are you really doing it? Mm. So it's sometimes hard to be objective. So I'm saying, sure, once in a while doesn't hurt. But if once in a while becomes a daily thing, then it's really
all right,
bad.
Now I'm just going to press you on this because you told me earlier that there was no safe level for trans fats or for saturated fats. No safe level.
Right.
And then you say, okay, in moderation, they can have a few French fries.
No, moderation is a very tricky term. It's a relative term. I admit I'm on one end of the bell-shaped curve when it comes to diet. I really try to eat a good diet. Now, I don't always, I like a hot fudge sundae too, but generally I eat well. So moderation for me is at a whole different point than it is for many people. You know, we eat a diet of such extremes in this country that to tell somebody to eat something in moderation will likely still result in a diet that's too high in sodium, too high in added sugar, too high in saturated fat, and too low in fiber. You know, these are the issues that we're dealing with in our country. So when you say eat it in moderation, that really has to be detailed for most people.
Is it in moderation to have a 5 or 6 year old having any of the French fries that have probably been fried in either trans fat or saturated fat?
If my 6 year old were to go to a birthday party and go to a fast food restaurant and order fries that contain trans fat, if that child is otherwise eating well, eating most of his or her meals at home, then I would hazard a guess that that's probably an acceptable form of
moderation. Not to destroy, not to get into a big confrontation with your child or with your child's friends and the parents of the friends about, oh, no, we will not let them go to.
Because everybody well, let's say that most people understand that there's a social context to food. And, you know, most everybody has some food traditions, and there's a social side to eating out. And I think there's a benefit to children being able to enjoy a piece of birthday cake with their friends.
Yep. I guess that's right. What about bringing food to school and for younger children in primary school? The idea of bringing cookies and cake and all kinds of sweets. Some people are pretty fanatical about not participating in that or having their children participate. Are you a fanatic about that too?
Well, I'll tell you, I'm really pleased at some of the changes that have taken place over the last several years in the Chapel Hill Carrboro School District and Orange County Schools. More teachers are and more schools are making it a policy that junk foods, sweets, candy, cake aren't brought in and on a regular basis, and that's great. I think that the changes in vending machines are a positive thing. More schools and across the country, too, are banning soft drinks from vending machines. And I think, you know, the next area that should be addressed is sports activities and extracurricular activities where candy bars and soft drinks, you know, et cetera, are sold. So I think that most junk foods should be kept off the school campus. But am I fanatical? I enjoy Halloween, too. And I don't mind. You know, I think a little candy now and then isn't going to hurt anybody. But as a matter of principle, as a matter of general policy, I think the changes we're seeing happening in schools are good ones.
Every now and then, I guess. moderation. Well, Sue Hobbs, we've talked a little bit about your book about Get the Trans Fat Out, and we've begun to talk about some of the other villains in food. And after the break, I'd like for us to visit about some of the, to get off the trans fat and saturated fat and talk about other villains in foods, if there are any.
We can talk about some good guys, too.
All right, we'll talk about the good guys after this short break. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. I'm talking to Suzanne Havala Hobbs, who is a newspaper columnist, writes about food for the Raleigh News and Observer, for the Charlotte Observer and other newspapers, and in her spare time is on the faculty at the School of Public Health. And you're not only a clinical assistant professor, but you're director of the doctoral program in health leadership.
That's
What's
right.
that all about?
I'm sorry?
What's that all about?
Oh, it's a program. It's the only one in the world of its kind. That is a doctoral program in public health for mid-career working professionals from a variety of disciplines. I mean, it's a very diverse group of people that we bring together, and we put them through a distance doctoral program. They stay where they're working. We have people all over the world in the program. And what they have in common is a passion for public health and a commitment to leadership training that will enable them to take on top jobs wherever they go.
Not just your specialty of food. This is across the public health spectrum.
Absolutely. We have doctors, lawyers, nurses, dentists, public or mental health professionals. We have people from people who in their jobs have the potential to affect the public's health in a variety of ways.
Well, topic for another day, perhaps.
Yes,
perhaps.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Now, we talked about trans fat, and we talked about it because of the occasion of your book, Get the Trans Fat Out, which is some practical help and some good sort of introductory, understandable explanation of why trans fats are bad. But we don't want to wear trans fats and saturated fats out. So I said, let's talk about some of the other villains, thinking about you've written about sugars and other kinds of food that is not all that good. And you say, yeah, but let's talk about the good things, too. You want to talk about the good things or the bad things?
It's all compatible. It's all compatible. You know, the foods that have added sugar, added sodium, artificial colorings and flavorings tend to be foods that are highly processed. The foods that are full of the good guys, the foods that are full of the health-supporting phytochemicals and other vitamins and minerals and fiber are also the foods that tend to be less processed. So when you're choosing foods, the more you can eat as close to its natural state as possible, the better. So lots of salads, lots of fresh fruits, lots of vegetables. That's the ticket.
Well, if that's the case, if that's all there is to it, how can you write these books and write newspaper columns every week or so? What more is there to say?
The thing that people need the most help with is putting this into practice, because we live in a culture that doesn't readily support eating this way. We're surrounded by advertising that prompts kids and adults to eat foods that don't support health. We have fast food restaurants on every corner. Most of our towns and cities are built in such a way that we have to get in a car and go drive someplace if we want to, play in a park or exercise or go out to eat or go to the grocery store. Some people live in neighborhoods where they don't have access to grocery stores that are well-stocked with produce. I feel very fortunate to live in Chapel Hill because I subscribe to a community supported agriculture farm, a CSA farm. And
so you get fresh vegetables every week in the summer.
Just a few weeks, I'll be getting my delivery to my doorstep, a half bushel of organic produce, and that'll go on.
So that drives what you... So you like this because you get a bag... Instead of going to the grocery store and making selections, you get a bag full of stuff every week or so, and then you figure out a way to... cook these fresh vegetables.
That's right. I get a half bushel of whatever is ready in the field that day, and half a bushel every Thursday delivered to my doorstep. And that'll go on from about the middle of April through sometimes November.
Is that a very expensive operation?
It is expensive, and that's why not everybody has access to that kind
of $50 a week
benefit. It's less than that, but it's about $600 for the season. And that's quite a bit of food. I generally split mine with a friend. And so that feeds a family of four and another family of three. But it's quite a bit.
Well, that's an interesting take on it. And the other thing that I hear people in Chapel Hill bragging about in terms of pushing towards this kind of unprocessed food is the farmers markets.
Yes. So we're fortunate. I mean, In Chapel Hill, we have some of the benefits that make it easier to eat a health-supporting diet. There are many people all over this country who don't have access. They don't live in neighborhoods that, provide these kinds of benefits.
All right. Well, now let me tell you a secret, and my wife will shoot me for doing this, but less and less, I don't think we're alone, but less and less are we cooking at home at all. We're going out and buying prepared foods to eat from chicken salad and places that will just and from the prepared food areas of grocery stores and the other natural food stores. So that makes it even more complicated because there are no there's at least I haven't seen anything that's on the side that gives
that's
any
right.
guidance about what's in the different things. They all taste pretty good, though.
That's right. If you really want to know, you've got to dig a little deeper, and you've got to ask the person behind the counter to show you the recipe. And then you can begin to get a feel for what you're eating when you buy that food. But see, once again, in Chapel Hill, we're awfully lucky because we've got some stores like Whole Foods and Trader Joe's and Weaver Street Market that have these wholesome prepared foods.
Can we trust them? I mean, we can trust them. We can trust them to not put a little extra salt and extra sugar and maybe some trans fats and saturated fats in the things they fix for us.
Most natural food stores it's a self-imposed standard of practice that precludes them using foods that contain partially hydrogenated oils or trans fats. So
I can buy a potato salad there okay and not worry.
Better than the potato salad.
Worry less.
Better, worry less is probably it. Some of it is still made with mayonnaise. Some of it's made with soy mayonnaise, and that's better. But what I'm saying is, here we go again. If you're going out to buy foods, it is more expensive to buy things that are ready-made. Not everybody can afford to do it, but if you are fortunate enough to be able to afford it, then you can, especially living in our area here, go out and buy some pretty health-supporting foods. If you are in a grocery store and you're buying carrots, baby carrots that are already peeled or lettuce that's already washed, you may pay a little more, but it may be worth it if you eat carrots and eat salad.
So those are not processed in the sense of being corrupted. They're just processed.
Pre-prepared,
yeah. Well, I'm talking to Sue Hobbs. We're talking about her book, Get the Trans Fat Out, and we've drifted into talking about some of the other villains in the food business, and she's leading me to talk about some of the heroes of food that we eat. She and I will be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. I'm talking to Suzanne Havala Hobbs. She's on the faculty at the School of Public Health, a newspaper columnist, a cook at home, a mama who's cooking for two children. How you all do all this is a topic for another conversation. And you're writing this newspaper column every week, and I was teasing you a few minutes ago about, okay, you've given us the advice, you've told us what we shouldn't eat and what we should eat, and yet you're able to write fresh material every week confronting the challenges that we have in eating right.
And there are plenty of them.
Yeah, well, just in the last few weeks, what was your favorite? What was the hardest? What was the favorite? Tell us about some of your columns.
I'll tell you, the hardest columns to write are the ones that deal with policy issues. So, places where the federal government falls through and doesn't protect us. And, so whether we're talking about mad cow or E. coli or, other food safety issues, we may be talking about labeling issues, the National School Lunch Program, the dietary guidelines policy, those are the more difficult topics to research and write about because they are so complex. The topics that I get the most questions about from readers are really, for me, the very simplest topics. And those are the ones that deal with, what can I make for dinner tonight? How can I pull this off? And that's what I find that most people need the most help with.
Well, all right, well, I'll ask you a column question. And that is, I got to fix supper tonight. And I want the simplest, easiest supper to fix. And that would be good. Now, let me tell you what I do, and then you tell me what's wrong with it and what the substitute might be.
Okay, we'll do a makeover.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so the easiest thing for me to do, and I love this because it's just great.
Your eyes are lighting up.
No, I'll go home and I'll pull out, or if I don't have it, I'll run to the grocery store and get just a simple box of spaghetti noodles.
Okay.
I'll get boiling water, throw the spaghetti in, and I'll buy a can of spaghetti sauce.
Mm-hmm.
And when the spaghetti's out, I'll warm up the spaghetti sauce and I'll pour it over the warm spaghetti, and I'm a happy man.
That's easy. That's
all right. What's wrong with that?
It's high in sodium, and it might be low in fiber. And so what I would do is I would probably add some. I would take a bag of frozen vegetables and heat them up in the microwave, and add those to the sauce and the pasta. I would buy whole wheat pasta. That's all I buy now. It used to be kind of sticky and gummy, 10, 15 years ago. The pasta that you can buy in the grocery store now is just fantastic. So I would buy whole wheat spaghetti, add a bag of frozen cooked vegetables to what you've just done. And if you can buy canned lower sodium tomato sauce, buy it. And other than that, there's nothing wrong with what you had.
Can't believe it.
Very
I thought
simple,
it was terrible.
But I'll bet you didn't need a recipe either.
No, I didn't need a recipe.
That's another key to keeping it simple. I find, just getting to the point where you can put some simple foods together without a recipe and have a good meal.
All right, well, I'll tell you what else I might do.
Okay.
And this is a little bit tougher, but I found this to be very simple, is that I can go down to the grocery store and buy a small chicken, and I can put something on the chicken or not, but I can put that chicken in the oven at something, 350, 400 degrees, cook it for 45 minutes or so if it's a small chicken, and it just comes out oozing with wonderful sauce and fat. And so I've got my chicken to eat.
Okay.
And now, That's, you know, I love that because that looks like it's a whole lot more work than it really is. And so what's wrong with eating this chicken?
Well, a whole chicken, it probably has skin on it.
Yeah, okay. That's really good.
All right. And you're probably eating much more in volume than you need meat. And so what I would do is I would make that chicken, I would stretch it over several meals or share it with several people so that you're not eating a big hunk of chicken as the main thing of for that meal, and instead eating small bits. And once again,
you let me cook it, but not eat it all.
And then pull the vegetables in and, you know, eat heaping helpings of vegetables.
Well, you know, here, this is your, you keep coming back to this. And this is something that I'm, is not part of my routine. And that is, it sounds like you're saying that bags of frozen mixed vegetables are sort of the heroes of, are they really?
I mean, if we're trying to balance good nutrition and convenience and ease of preparation, you know, these are all factors that enter into what people really do when it comes to making dinner. So frozen vegetables are nearly identical nutritionally to fresh, and they're convenient. So
do you have a big bag full of frozen vegetables in your freezer? Or you just go out and buy little ones every, or is that just something you advise for other people?
I tell you, this time of year, you go fresh. Within a couple of weeks, my CSA subscription will start kicking in.
Your CSA?
My community supported agriculture. Farm subscription.
So
I get my half
delivery to the door.
Yes, fresh
vegetables.
Fresh,
all right, so
locally grown, organic vegetables.
In the wintertime,
In the wintertime, that's when I use frozen vegetables. And that's usually when, if you opened my refrigerator, my freezer at home, you'd see probably 7 to 10 bags of different kinds of frozen vegetables. And depending upon what we're having for dinner, I typically add a bag of frozen vegetables. You know, we eat vegetables with every meal. Or I may mix the vegetables in with pasta. You know, one of my favorite meals, quick meals to make, just like yours, is to buy whole wheat rotini pasta or the bow ties, you know, buy whole wheat. And instead of adding tomato sauce to mine, I prefer pesto. And so I mix mine with olive oil and pesto or basil, you know, sauce.
Okay, or I could just take a can of tomatoes. Would that
sure
be okay?
Yeah, oh, sure. Yeah,
that's okay?
Sure, but I would, if you could buy low sodium or lower sodium, I would. But yeah, and add fresh vegetables to that and toss it all together.
Well, oh me. Well, we just got a minute or two more, and I've just ask you all of these questions. I'm still not confident that I can eat right, and I want to confess one more thing that I really like. And I just think eggs are the greatest food product ever, and yet you dietitian, you all say, oh, you know, that's terrible for your – can you give me some help? What? I mean, I love a whole egg.
Well, a whole egg won't hurt you once in a while.
Like once a year or once a day or once a...
It's almost impossible for anybody to tell you exactly how many is too many. But it all depends on your personal physiology and what you eat the rest of the time. But I'll tell you what, one of my simple pleasures, I don't do it very often, maybe a couple times a year, but, you know, if I go out to eat at Breadman's, one of my favorite breakfast joints, I order an omelet, but I'll order an egg white omelet, and you can't tell the difference. They're great, and whole wheat toast. You know,
All right, I'll take that to heart, and we'll look forward to your next book, and we'll look forward to every week a column.
Thank you.
From
Thank
the
you.
News
Keep it
and Observer.
Simple. That's the motto to live by.
And in the Raleigh News and Observer, and we're so proud that you're a part of the Chapel Hill community and your willingness to share your wisdom with those of us who live here.
Thanks so much, DJ.
Thanks so much to Sue Hobbs. And thanks to all y'all for listening. I'll be back here same time tomorrow.